Chapter 41. Vinicius had barely time to command a few slaves to follow him. Then, springing on his horse, he rushed forth in the deep night along the empty streets toward Laurentum. Through the influence of the dreadful news, he had fallen as it were into frenzy and mental distraction. At moments he did not know clearly what was happening in his mind. He had merely the feeling that misfortune was on the horse with him, sitting behind his shoulders, and shouting in his ears, "Rome is burning!" That it was lashing his horse and him, urging them toward the fire. Laying his bare head on the beast's neck, he rushed on, in his single tunic, alone, at random, not looking ahead, and taking no note of obstacles against which he might perchance dash himself. In silence and in that calm night, the rider and the horse, covered with gleams of the moon, seemed like dream visions. The Idumean stallion, dropping his ears and stretching his neck, shot on like an arrow past the motionless cypresses, and the white villas hidden among them. The sound of hoofs on the stone flags roused dogs here and there. These followed the strange vision with their barking. Afterward, excited by its suddenness, they fell to howling, and raised their jaws toward the moon. The slaves hastening after Vinicius soon dropped behind, as their horses were greatly inferior. When he had rushed like a storm through sleeping Laurentum, he turned toward Ardea, in which, as in Aricia, Bavor, and Ustrinum, he had kept relays of horses from the day of his coming to Antium, so as to pass in the shortest time possible the interval between Rome and him. Remembering these relays, he forced all the strength from his horse. Beyond Ardea it seemed to him that the sky on the northeast was covered with a rosy reflection. That might be the dawn, for the hour was late, and in July daybreak came early. But Vinicius could not keep down a cry of rage and despair, for it seemed to him that that was the glare of the conflagration. He remembered the consul's words, "The whole city is one sea of flame," and for a while he felt that madness was threatening him really, for he had lost utterly all hope that he could save Lydia, or even reach the city before it was turned into one heap of ashes. His thoughts were quicker now than the rush of the stallion. They flew on ahead like a flock of birds, black, monstrous, and rousing despair. He knew not, it is true, in what part of the city the fire had begun, but he supposed that the Trans-Tiber division, as it was packed with tenements, timber yards, storehouses, and wooden sheds serving as slave marts, might have become the first food of the flames. In Rome, fires happened frequently enough. During these fires, as frequently, deeds of violence and robbery were committed, especially in the parts occupied by a needy and half-barbarous population. What might happen, therefore, in a place like the Trans-Tiber, which was the retreat of a rabble collected from all parts of the earth? Here the thought of Ursus with his preterhuman power flashed into Vinicius's head. But what could be done by a man, even were he a titan, against the destructive force of fire? The fear of servile rebellion was like a nightmare, which had stifled Rome for whole years. It was said that hundreds of thousands of those people were thinking of the times of Spartacus, and merely waiting for a favorable moment to seize arms against their oppressors and Rome. Now the moment had come. Perhaps war and slaughter were raging in the city together with fire. It was possible, even, that the Praetorians had hurled themselves on the city, and were slaughtering at command of Caesar. And that moment the hair rose from terror on his head. He recalled all the conversations about burning cities, which for some time had been repeated at Caesar's court with wonderful persistence. He recalled Caesar's complaints that he was forced to describe a burning city without having seen a real fire, his contemptuous answer to Tigellinus, who offered to burn Antium or an artificial wooden city, finally, his complaints against Rome and the pestilential alleys of the Suburra. Yes, Caesar has commanded the burning of the city. He alone could give such a command, as Tigellinus alone could accomplish it. But if Rome is burning at command of Caesar, who can be sure that the population will not be slaughtered at his command also? The monster is capable even of such a deed. conflagration, a servile revolt, and slaughter. What a horrible chaos, what a letting loose of destructive elements and popular frenzy. And in all this is Lygia. The groans of Vinicius were mingled with the snorting and groans of his horse. The beast, running on a road which rose continually toward Aricia, was using the last of its breath. Who will snatch her from the burning city? Who can save her? Here Vinicius, stretching himself entirely on the horse, thrust his fingers into his own hair, ready to gnaw the beast's neck from pain. At that moment a horseman, rushing also like a whirlwind, but in the opposite direction, toward Antium, shouted as he raced past, "Rome is perishing!" And on he went. To the ears of Vinicius came only one more expression, "Colon gods," the rest was drowned by the thunder of hoofs. But that expression sobered him, "Odds!" Vinicius raised his head suddenly, and, stretching his arms toward the sky filled with stars, began to pray. "Not to you do I call whose temples are burning, but to thee. Thou thyself hast suffered. Thou alone art merciful. Thou alone hast understood Pippi's pain. Thou didst come to this world, to teach pity to mankind. Then show it now. If thou art what Peter and Paul declare, save for me Lygia, take her in thy arms, bear her out of the flames. Thou hast the power to do that. Give her to me, and I will give thee my blood. But if thou art unwilling to do this for me, do it for her. She loves thee, and trusts in thee. Thou dost promise life and happiness after death, but happiness after death will not pass away, and she does not wish to die yet. Let her live. Take her in thy arms, bear her out of Rome. Thou canst do so, unless thou art unwilling." And he stopped, for he felt that further prayer might turn to a threat. He feared to offend divinity at the moment when he needed favor and mercy most. He was terrified at the very thought of that, and, so as not to admit to his head a shade even of threat, he began to lash his horse again, especially since the white walls of Aricia, which lay midway to Rome, gleamed up before him in the moonlight. After a time he rushed at full speed past the Temple of Mercury, which stood in a grove before the city. Evidently people knew of the catastrophe, for there was an uncommon movement in front of the temple. While passing, Vinicius saw crowds on the steps, and between the columns. These people holding torches were hastening to put themselves under protection of the deity. Moreover, the road was not so empty or free as beyond Ardea. Crowds were hurrying, it is true, to the grove by side paths, but on the main road were groups which pushed aside hurriedly before the onrushing horsemen. From the town came the sound of voices. Vinicius rode into Aricia like a whirlwind, overturning and trampling a number of persons on the way. He was surrounded by shouts of, "Rome is burning! Our Rome is on fire! May the gods rescue Rome!" The horse stumbled, but, reined in by a powerful hand, rose on his haunches before the inn, where Vinicius had another beast in relay. Slaves, as if waiting for the arrival of their master, stood before the inn, and at his command, ran one before the other to lead out a fresh horse. Vinicius, seeing a detachment of 10 mounted praetorians, going evidently with news from the city to Antium, sprang toward them. "What part of the city is on fire?" inquired he. "Who art thou?" asked the decurioni. "Vinicius, a tribune of the army, an Augustan. Answer on thy head. The fire broke out in the shops near the Circus Maximus. When we were dispatched, the center of the city was on fire." "And the Trans-Tiber?" "The fire has not reached the Trans-Tiber yet, but it is seizing new parts every moment with a force which nothing can stop. People are perishing from heat and smoke. All rescue is impossible." At this moment they brought the fresh horse. The young tribune sprang to his back and rushed on. He was riding now toward Albanum, leaving Alba Longa and its splendid lake on the right. The road from Aricia lay at the foot of the mountain, which hid the horizon completely, and Albanum lying on the other side of it. But Vinicius knew that on reaching the top he should see, not only Boviale and Ustrinum, where fresh horses were ready for him, but Rome as well. Before beyond Albanum, the low-level Campania stretched on both sides of the Appian Way, along which only the arches of the aqueducts ran toward the city, and nothing obstructed the view. "From the top I shall see the flames," said he, and he began to lash his horse anew. But before he had reached the top of the mountain he felt the wind on his face, and with it came the odor of smoke to his nostrils. At the same time the summit of the height was becoming gilded. "The fire," thought Vinicius. The night had paled long since, the dawn had passed into light, and on all the nearer summits golden and rosy gleams were shining, which might come either from burning Rome or the rising daylight. Vinicius touched the summit at last, and then a terrible sight struck his eyes. The whole lower region was covered with smoke, forming as it were one gigantic cloud lying close to the earth. In this cloud towns, aqueducts, villas, trees, disappeared. But beyond this gray ghastly plain the city was burning on the hills. The conflagration had not the form of a pillar of fire, as happens when a single building is burning, even when of the greatest size. That was a long belt, rather, shaped like the belt of dawn. Above this belt rose a wave of smoke, in places entirely black, in places looking rose-colored, in places like blood, in places turning in on itself, in some places inflated, in others squeezed and squirming, like a serpent which is unwinding and extending. That monstrous wave seemed at times to cover even the belt of fire, which became then as narrow as a ribbon, but later this ribbon illuminated the smoke from beneath, changing its lower rolls into waves of flame. The two extended from one side of the sky to the other, hiding its lower part, as at times a stretch of forest hides the horizon. The Saban hills were not visible in the least. To Vinicius it seemed at the first glance of the eye, that not only the city was burning, but the whole world, and that no living being could save itself from that ocean of flame and smoke. The wind blew with growing strength from the region of the fire, bringing the smell of burnt things and of smoke, which began to hide even nearer objects. Clear daylight had come, and the sun lighted up the summits surrounding the Alban Lake. But the bright golden rays of the morning appeared as it were reddish and sickly through the haze. Vinicius, while descending toward Albanum, entered smoke which was denser, less and less transparent. The town itself was buried in it thoroughly. The alarmed citizens had moved out to the street. It was a terror to think of what might be in Rome, WHCN. It was difficult to breathe in Albanum. Despair seized Vinicius anew, and terror began to raise the hair on his head. But he tried to fortify himself as best he might. "It is impossible," thought he, "that a city should begin to burn in all places at once. The wind is blowing from the north, and bears smoke in this direction only. On the other side there is none. But in every ease it will be enough for Ursus to go through the Janiculum gate with Lygia, to save himself and her. It is equally impossible that a whole population should perish, and the world-ruling city be swept from the face of the earth with its inhabitants. Even in captured places, where fire and slaughter rage together, some people survive in all cases. Why, then, should Lygia perish of a certainty? On the contrary, God watches over her, he who himself conquered death." Thus reasoning, he began to pray again, and, yielding to fixed habit, he made great vows to Christ, with promises of gifts and sacrifices. After he had hurried through Albanum, nearly all of whose inhabitants were on roofs and on trees to look at Rome, he grew somewhat calm and regained his cool blood. He remembered, too, that Lygia was protected not only by Ursus and Linus, but by the Apostle Peter. At the mere remembrance of this, fresh solace entered his heart. For him Peter was an incomprehensible, an almost superhuman being. From the time when he heard him at Astrianum, a wonderful impression clung to him, touching which he had written to Lygia at the beginning of his stay in Antium, that every word of the old man was true, or would show its truth hereafter. The nearer acquaintance which during his illness he had formed with the apostle heightened the impression, which was turned afterward into fixed faith. Since Peter had blessed his love and promised him Lydia, Lydia could not perish in the flames. The city might burn, but no spark from the fire would fall on her garments. Under the influence of a sleepless night, mad writing, and impressions, a wonderful exaltation possessed the young tribune. In this exaltation all things seemed possible. Peter speaks to the flame, opens it with a word, and they pass uninjured through an alley of fire. Moreover, Peter saw future events. Hence, beyond doubt, he foresaw the fire, and in that ease, how could he fail to warn and lead forth the Christians from the city, and among others Lydia, whom he loved, as he might his own child? And a hope, which was strengthening every moment, entered the heart of Vinicius. If they were fleeing from the city, he might find them in Bovoli, or meet them on the road. The beloved face might appear any moment from out the smoke, which was stretching more widely over all the Campania. This seemed to him more likely, since he met increasing numbers of people, who had deserted the city, and were going to the Alban Hills. They had escaped the fire, and wished to go beyond the line of smoke. Before he had reached Ustrinum he had to slacken his pace, because of the throng. Besides pedestrians with bundles on their backs, he met horses with packs, mules and vehicles laden with effects, and finally litters in which slaves were bearing the wealthier citizens. Ustrinum was so thronged with fugitives from Rome that it was difficult to push through the crowd. On the market square, under temple porticos, and on the streets, were swarms of fugitives. Here and there people were erecting tents under which whole families were to find shelter. Others settled down under the naked sky, shouting, calling on the gods, or cursing the fates. In the general terror it was difficult to inquire about anything. People to whom Vinicius applied either did not answer, or with eyes half bewildered from terror answered that the city and the world were perishing. New crowds of men, women, and children arrived from the direction of Rome every moment. These increased the disorder and outcry. Some, gone astray in the throng, sought desperately those whom they had lost. Others fought for a camping place. Half-wild shepherds from the Campania crowded to the town to hear news, or find profit in plunder made easy by the uproar. Here and there crowds of slaves of every nationality and gladiators fell to robbing houses and villas in the town, and to fighting with the soldiers who appeared in defense of the citizens. Junius, a senator, whom Vinicius saw at the inn surrounded by a detachment of Batavian slaves, was the first to give more detailed news of the conflagration. The fire had begun at the Circus Maximus, in the part which touches the Palatine and the Caelian Hill, but extended with incomprehensible rapidity, and seized the whole center of the city. Never since the time of Brennus had such an awful catastrophe come upon Rome. The entire circus has burnt, as well as the shops and houses surrounding it, said Junius. The Aventine and Caelian Hills are on fire. The flames surrounding the Palatine have reached the Carinae. Here Junius, who possessed on the Carinae a magnificent insula, filled with works of art which he loved, seized a handful of foul dust, and, scattering it on his head, began to groan despairingly. But Vinicius shook him by the shoulder, colon, my house too is on the Carinae, said he, but when everything is perishing, let it perish also. Then recollecting that at his advice Lydia might have gone to the house of Aulus, he inquired, but the Vicus Patricius? On fire, replied Junius. The Trans-Tiber? Janius looked at him with amazement. Never mind the Trans-Tiber, said he, pressing his aching temples with his palms. The Trans-Tiber is more important to me than all other parts of Rome, cried Vinicius, with vehemence. The way is through the Via Portuensis, near the Aventine, but the heat will stifle thee. The Trans-Tibet? I know not. The fire had not reached it, but whether it is not there at this moment the gods alone know. Here Junius hesitated a moment, then said in a low voice, colon, I know that thou wilt not betray me, so I will tell thee that this is no common fire. People were not permitted to save the circus. When houses began to burn in every direction, I myself heard thousands of voices exclaiming, "Death to those who save!" Certain people ran through the city and hurled burning torches into buildings. On the other hand, people are revolting and crying that the city is burning at command. I can say nothing more. Woe to the city, woe to us all, and to me. The tongue of man cannot tell what is happening there. People are perishing in flames or slaying one another in the throng. This is the end of Rome. And again he fell to repeating, "Woe! Woe to the city and to us!" Vinicius sprang to his horse and hurried forward along the Appian Way. But now it was rather a struggling through the midst of a river of people and vehicles, which was flowing from the city. The city, embraced by a monstrous conflagration, lay before Vinicius as a thing on the palm of his hand. From the sea of fire and smoke came a terrible heat, and the uproar of people could not drown the roar and the hissing of flames. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.